20 days passed before they returned to the lodge with the red door standing in the valley of the Flat River. The two waiting hunters were happy for their return. Some time ago, many days, one said, she began to weep and gashed her arms in mourning and cut her hair. And since then, she has worn ashes on her face. She knows something, said a leader. She knows her husband is gone. He did not reach the other shore of that lake. Something pulled him under. The youngest hunter gave the man's belongings to his mourning wife. She took them and thanked him for taking the journey with her husband. They waited for days out of respect for her state of mourning, making sure that she had food and water. One day, she finally spoke to them. I must return to my village, she said. We will take you there. Your husband asked us to do so, and we will, said the leader. They traveled south by east, and the young widow spoke not at all. Though she cooked for them and would help set up their night camps, she kept her thoughts to herself. After 15 days, they came to a large encampment just west of the Great Muddy River, north of where the Bad River flows into it. She was welcomed home by her family. The hunters were invited to stay as long as they chose, but they were anxious to return to their homes. They did stay to rest for a few days. On the evening before they were to leave, the young widow came to the hunters' camp. I must tell you of my husband, she said. When he was a young man, he had a good friend who became a powerful medicine man. But he turned to the darker side of the powers he had and became a helper for some bad spirits. My husband turned away from him, and in time he became a great warrior and a leader to whom the people turned. The medicine man was jealous of that and used his powers against my husband. He used a special medicine to take my husband's first wife away from him. Even then, my husband would not give in. And the medicine man was shamed in front of the people. He went crazy and died that way. A spirit, a bad spirit, came to my husband. He said there was to be punishment, but that my husband had to choose. He could take the shame of banishment, or he could watch his own village go crazy like the medicine man did. My husband chose banishment. The spirit told him that one day 4 men would come for him, but that he would never know when. The spirit wanted my husband to think that every day was his last. He had one other choice. My husband could lift the punishment from himself whenever he wanted, but that meant his whole village would go crazy. How is it that you became his wife? The youngest hunter asked. My father sent me to him, she replied. He told me the story of this brave and honorable man and said that his kind of honor and bravery must not die with him. It must be passed on. And so it has, because I have his child. The hunters returned to their own village. When their relatives asked why they had been away for so long, they would only reply that they had lost their way and made a long journey. But in time, they told the story of that long journey. Some of the people believed it, and some did not. Yet over time, it was noticed that the 4 hunters who shared the journey were the humblest and most honorable men in the village. Perhaps it is difficult to believe in giant snakes, but I have lived long enough to know that there is much I don't know. I can't say for certain that giant snakes don't exist, because I have seen many things in my life that may seem unbelievable to some or just normal to others, like a man walking on the moon. But I do know for certain that there are many wondrous, powerful, and mysterious things we may experience in our lives. I hope one of them is honor. The color of honor. A wise man was asked what virtue he would choose if he were to be known by only one. Honor, he replied without hesitation. If I am known for being honorable, it can only mean that I have demonstrated many other virtues. The application of virtue is the positive core of any culture, society, or nation. Like individuals, nations can be kind, generous, truthful, honest, and courageous. Those individuals, cultures, societies, and nations that indiscriminately, blindly, if you will, apply all virtues in their conduct and dealings will establish themselves and emerge as the most honorable. To be honorable is to have integrity, to be honest, and to do what is morally correct. As much as judgment is based on what we do, it is also, and perhaps more indelibly, defined by what we fail to do. A man received as payment more money than he was owed. He kept the extra sum, looking on it as an unexpected reward. But the values he was taught told him that it was wrong to have kept the extra money. For many years, he pushed aside that truth, but it remained in his awareness like a pebble in his shoe. Finally, he returned twice the amount of the extra money and was highly commended for it, but he was circumspect and turned aside all the praise. "Don't you feel good about your honorable act?" he was asked. "No," he replied. "Returning the money after all these years was merely atonement. The honorable act would have been to return it immediately." Honor was and is important to Lakota culture, just as it is to cultures the world over. But to define the traditional Lakota sense of honor, it is necessary to examine Plains Indian intertribal warfare. It is perhaps incongruous or illogical to speak of honor within the context of warfare and combat, given the terrible efficiency of modern weaponry and the horrific record of wartime atrocities. Any extremely difficult situation demands courage, and war and combat are arguably the most extreme tests of courage. As despicable as war is, it is a saving grace for the human species that most who engage or participate in it endeavor to do so with honor. Honor can be as simple as a ceasefire when the vanquished lay down their arms. It can be as grandiose as General Ulysses Grant allowing the surrendering Confederate soldiers to keep their horses at the end of the American Civil War in 1865. Among the Plains Indian tribes prior to the so-called Indian Wars of the 19th century, honor was often associated with warfare for practical and moral reasons. War is and has been basically the same the world over. If it is defensive action, it is usually to resist encroachment or invasion, imperialism. As an offensive action, it is usually to encroach or invade, which are imperialistic notions. Consequently, a nation or a culture is judged by how and why it engages itself in war. Intertribal warfare on the pre-European plains of North America was perceived to be rooted in savagery first and foremost, simply because the people of the plains were considered to be savages. Savage is as savage does. However, intertribal warfare had a different meaning and purpose than the usual defensive, offensive aspects of imperialistic warfare. It was, in a real sense, an intentional proving ground. Lakota fighting men achieved honors in the arena of combat from courageous deeds and honorable conduct. Armed clashes between enemy tribes were rarely long, arduous campaigns involving hundreds of warriors. They were more often intense, short-lived engagements between small forces of 10 to 50 men. And while it was necessary to protect home, family, and precious hunting territories, warfare as a consequence of outright imperialism was infrequent. More frequent was the provocation of conflict solely to create an opportunity for combatants to conspicuously display deeds of courage and honor. There was one highly significant difference between European-style warfare and Plains Indian warfare. Europeans and Euro-Americans fought to kill as many of the enemy as possible while doing considerable damage to their supply and support functions. Plains Indian warriors endeavored to demonstrate courage and honor in the face of the enemy, and defeating an enemy didn't necessarily mean having to kill him. Lakota and other Plains warriors considered it far more courageous and therefore more honorable to touch a live enemy in battle and live to tell about it, because that courage and honor were the basis for the strength of a tribe. It was good, strong medicine to have more of both than the enemy. And it was the number and frequency of brave and honorable deeds that served to defeat one's enemy, not the number of dead bodies on a battlefield. Defeating the enemy in his own mind was better than taking his life. The unavoidable consequences of combat were wounds and death, always a clear and present danger. Combat was by no means an easy proving ground. There was, therefore, no higher calling to defend one's people, no greater sacrifice than to lay down one's life in the defense of one's people. That philosophy was summed up in a reminder from the Antiquities of Memory, spoken by women to their husbands and sons, to go boldly ahead, for it is better to lie a warrior naked in death than to be wrapped up well with a heart of water inside. The words of many warrior songs articulate that quite clearly, such as the following. I go forward under the banner of the people. I do this so that the people may live. The underlying rationale was that if a man was capable of acting bravely and honorably in the midst of the most violent, chaotic, and frightening of circumstances, he was capable of bravery and honor in the time of peace. The benefit to the people was twofold. Their fighting men were totally committed to the defense of families, home, and homeland, and the lessons of courage and honor learned under the most difficult of circumstances would serve to benefit all of the people in any circumstance.